every 2 years, and we do it when we sense there's a real need and God puts a burden on someone's heart. And what we're going to do is, after we have our lesson, we're going to have a time of prayer for those who are sick in that class. And we're talking about physical sickness. And what we're going to do is, we're going to have four locations where, if you have an illness, you can go to. Back here, we're going to have one station, and David McKinnon is going to pray for those over in that section of the room if you want to go there. And then over here, Jim Stevenson, raise your hand, Jim, so everybody can see you. He's going to be praying for people, and you go to that section of the room. And then we have Gene Blaylock, who's over here, and he's going to be praying for people in that section of the room. And then Don Morton's going to be over here, and he's going to pray for people in that section of the room. So what we're going to ask you to do after we have our lesson, we're just going to have a time for prayer. Bill's going to play the piano, just get up and go there, and these gentlemen will pray for you. If you are a lady and you have a physical problem that you wouldn't want to tell to a man, Carrie Blaylock's going to be over here. She'll be praying for you. And then what we want the rest of us to do is, we want you to go to one of the groups where you know somebody who's being prayed for, and just lay your hand on their shoulders while the prayer is being made, and you pray for them as well. Okay? Now, some of you won't want to get up. You don't have a need. You don't need to get up. Some of you can't get up, okay, because you just hurt. But you need prayer. If you'll just raise your hand, I'll come around and I'll pray for you. Okay? So, and the rest of us can just pray in our seats. We're not going to prolong this thing. This is not going to be something loud. This is not going to be something that's demonstrative. You know what? We've done it once before, and we're going to just do that again. So, also, let me say that if you know somebody who's very sick and they couldn't be here today, and they've asked you to bring their prayer request to one of the groups, please do that as well. Okay? Well, let's take our Bibles, and we're going to open to the Gospel of Mark. The Gospel of Mark. Yes, the Gospel of Mark for a special little teaching. And we're going to look at the healing of the man known as Bartimaeus, blind Bartimaeus. Now, I'm just going to read the passage to you first, make some comments. Okay, so it's Mark chapter 10. And the story is found in verses 46 through 52. That's Mark 10, 46 through 52. Now, what we're going to discover, and I think most of us realize this, is that God healed in many different ways. He can heal sovereignly. He can heal through a doctor. He can heal through prayer. Many different ways. We're going to discover just one of the ways that he heals today in this situation. So let me read the passage. Now they came to Jericho, that's Jesus and the crowd that's following him, and as he went out of Jericho with his disciples, a great multitude, blind Bartimaeus, the son of Timaeus, sat by the road begging. And when he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to cry out and say, Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me. And many warned him to be quiet, but he cried out all the more, son of David, have mercy on me. So Jesus stood still, and he commanded him to be called, and then they called the blind man, saying to him, be of good cheer. Rise, he's calling to you. And throwing aside his garment, he rose up and he came to Jesus. And so Jesus answered and said to him, what do you want me to do for you? And the blind man said to him, Rabboni, that I might receive my sight. Then Jesus said to him, go your way, your faith has made you well or whole. And immediately he received his sight, and he followed Jesus on the road. Now, what I want to do today is something very different. I'm going to look at this story from the perspective of the blind man. He does five things in this passage. Each one of those actions that he takes is demonstrated through one of the verbs in this passage. For example, he cried out. That's a verb. He cried. And it tells us about something that he does. Okay, so we're going to look at the story from his perspective. Now, what I want to do is look at the story, however, in context. I want to see what goes on before that story and what happens after the story. If you look at verses 35 through 45, you'll see that the disciples asked Jesus, who's going to be great in the kingdom? What is greatness? Remember that story when they asked what is greatness? And Jesus said, you know, if you want to be great, you need to be a servant of all. Remember that? And then look at verse 45. He said, for even the Son of Man did not come to be served. Now, there's no exceptions to this. You want to be great in God's kingdom, you have to be a servant. Even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. And what would be the greatest thing that you could do would actually be to die for somebody. We have heroes who jump in a river and rescue somebody, but in doing so, they die for that individual. That's the ultimate act of sacrifice. So Jesus is talking about what it means to be great. It means to be a servant, even to the point of death. Now look what comes after the story. Verse 1 of chapter 11. That's the story of the triumphal entry, isn't it? So what is Jesus doing in the triumphal entry? He's entering the city of Jerusalem for what purpose? To die. Now, he says, what does it mean to be great? It means to sacrifice even to the point of death. And now he's going to demonstrate it. He's going to go to Jerusalem, and he's actually going to carry out that plan. He's going to die for the many people. So that's what we see between the two events. Now, on his way to Jerusalem, he passes through a city called Jericho. Notice it says in verse 46, they came to Jericho. Now, for us, that doesn't mean anything. The only thing you think about when you think about Jericho is what? Yeah, the walls came tumbling down. But for these people, going into Jericho was like passing through the vacation spot of the ancient world. It was a place of lush gardens. It was known as the rose capital of the world. And as a result of that, the aroma of roses during the summertime just filled the entire air. It was, 82 theaters. Think about that. Now we're talking about amphitheaters. We're talking about major theaters. It was a place where the rich and famous went to get away from it all. It had waterfalls, cascading waterfalls, and beautiful gardens, and all these kinds of things. So it would be the place to go to if you were living today. Where would be the place? Maybe the French Riviera or something. Okay? So you and I need to understand where they are going and where they're as they go to Jerusalem. They pass through Jericho. Now look what it says. And as he went out of Jericho with his disciples and a great multitude, because there were people following him to Jerusalem to celebrate the Passover feast. These were pilgrims. And many were following Jesus. As they were doing that, blind Bartimaeus, the son of Timaeus, and Bartimaeus is really not his name. Bar means son of. Timaeus means Timothy. We don't know the man's name. All we know is this guy was the son of somebody that was prominent in the town that they all knew was Timothy. This is Timothy's son. So his name isn't Bar. Okay? His name, we don't know his name. Just Bartimaeus, son of Timothy. And that's why the writer explains that to his possibly Gentile readers who wouldn't understand that. He's son of Timothy. He sat by the road begging. Now, when we look at this, we discover two things about Bartimaeus. Number one, he's blind. And number two, he's poor. He's a beggar. Now, in terms of what we would call today power and position, this is a nobody. In terms of power and position, this is the man on the absolute lowest economic and social scale that there was in ancient times. He was what historians call an expendable, a throwaway, a man who absolutely added not one whit to society. All he did was take from society. The Romans called these people expendables, and they didn't care whether they lived or they died. And so this is the kind of person we still have today in society. We see people like this, beggars. And this is the kind of person that people try to avoid. You've been downtown when people have come up and you've seen the beggars and the street people and you try to avoid them. Even Christians try to avoid them. Now, fortunately for this man, Jesus wasn't like most Christians. Look what happens. Look at verse 47. When he heard it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to cry out and say, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." Now, why would he do that? have mercy on him. Probably, that he's probably heard from someone that this guy, Jesus, has a mission. And his mission is to preach good news to who? The poor. And that the blind might receive back their sight. So here's the guy that offers this man hope. He knows that this is Jesus' mission, so he says, Son of David, have mercy on me. Now I want you to notice a couple things here from this statement. Number one, when he cries out and he says, Son of David, have mercy on me, he's drawing attention to himself. That's number one, he's drawing attention to himself. Notice that he recognizes who Jesus is. He calls him Son of David, which means Messiah. So he actually thinks that Jesus is the Jewish Messiah, or possibly the Jewish Messiah. And he knows from Old Testament scriptures that the Messiah is one, according to Isaiah 35, causes the blind to see, and the deaf to hear, and the lame to jump up and walk. And so he knows who Jesus is. But he also knows his condition. He knows who he is. And who is he? He's a man who needs help. He's the guy who needs help. He's the blind, poor beggar. Now, at this point, what we have is a vague statement. All Mark tells us is that he cries out and he says, have mercy on me. What does that mean, have mercy on me? It couldn't, because it's so vague, it doesn't really explain what it means. If I said have mercy on me, so what do you mean by have mercy? What do you mean have mercy on me? What do you want? And what could this man want? Well, he could want a handout, couldn't he? He's a beggar. So it could mean that. And I think that's how the crowd. If you look at verse 48, look what it says. Then many warned him, be quiet! Be quiet! Don't bother Jesus, he doesn't have time for you! The important people are following him. He doesn't have time for you. Be quiet! And it says, and he cried out all the more, Son of David, have mercy on me. So what we see is, if I would say step one, the first thing he does is he draws attention to himself, he cries out, he tries to get Jesus' attention, try to get Jesus to hear, look over in his direction, and that's the first step that we need to do. We need to say, hey, I need to come. And when we pray, the first thing we're going to do is come up to somebody and say, I need some help. Okay, so that's basically step number one. This man is persistent. He's not going to give up. Now look at verse 49. So Jesus stood still. He heard it. And he commanded him to be called. Then they, who are the they? Well, they're the same people in verse 48 who said, shut up. Then they, called the blind man, saying to him, you lucky guy! Be of good cheer. Rise up. He's calling you. So Jesus recognizes this man's need, and what he does is he invites the man to draw near. And that's what Jesus does to us. He invites us to come to him. See, it's one thing to cry out, have mercy on me, but guess what, Jesus, that's not it. Jesus doesn't turn around and heal this man. In this case, he invites the man to come to him, and that's what Jesus invites us to do. He says, come unto me, all ye that what? Labor and heavy laden, and I'll give you rest. So that's scene number one. Now look at verse 50. We're going to see verb number two. We'll look at it from the man's perspective. Okay? Action number two, verse 50. And throwing aside his garment, he rose and came to Jesus. He gets up and he comes to Jesus. Now, many of us cry out to Jesus every day to help us. And that's as far as we go. Oh, Lord, look at my situation. Help me, Lord. But we do absolutely nothing to come to Jesus. Okay? What we want is Jesus to come to us. Think about that. When we cry out, oh, Lord, help, Guess what this man wanted? Oh, Lord, help. What did he want Jesus to do? Come to him. But guess what Jesus said? No, no. You come to me. And you take step number two. You cry out and you get up. Come to Jesus. You don't expect him to come to us. Now, notice it says he tossed away his garment. Doesn't it say that in verse 50? Throwing aside his garment. What is this garment that he's got? Most likely this is a garment that he wore around his shoulders when he begged. He sat down probably on the ground begging. Sometimes it got cold and he could put it over him. Other times it blocked the sand that was blowing because of the wind. But it was also used like your grandmother's apron. And guess what she did with that apron? She went out to the garden. She mixed the garden, the vegetables, she put it in that apron. That's where that man put his offering. When people dropped the money, he just lifted his garment. That's where they put it. And that way it was always right next to him. And he'd have that garment just wrapped like this, and that somebody come over to give him some money, he'd open it up, they'd drop it in. But guess what? Jesus has come here, and guess what he does? He drops that, which is the most important thing that he has. Not only that, which protects his body, but also, when he gets up, whatever money he has that day just goes down on the ground, and he gets up and he comes to Jesus. He leaves what's important to him, and leaves it behind. And for this man, it could be a day's worth of donations. Okay? Now the third action that takes place. Look at verse 51. The third verb, and the third action. Verse 51. So Jesus answered and said to him, what do you want me to do for you? Now watch what the man does. The blind man said to him, Rabboni, means rabbi, teacher, here's what I want, that I might receive my sight. He verbally expresses specifically what he wants. It's not all just help anymore. It's not just mercy anymore. Guess what? Specifically says what he wants. I want my sight back. Now, just think about that for a moment, because if he gets his sight back, what's this going to mean for this man? He's going to have to go to work. His daily routine is going to be broken. Something he's done for the last 30 years, 40 years of his life. He's going to suddenly be responsible. So when he says, I want my sight, it means he's going to get out of his comfort zone. And guess what? He's no longer going to be the center of attraction. He's no longer going to be people going to say, hey, there's, yeah, we know, go down to, how do I get there? Oh, well, you go down to X Street, you turn right, you'll see Bartimaeus there, and go left. He'll no longer be the center of attention. He'll no longer be the person that everyone else is waiting on. Suddenly he's going to have to take responsibility. And I'm convinced that this is really important right here, because some of us have a love-hate relationship with our sickness. We want God to heal us. Oh, Lord, have mercy. But at the same time, what happens if he doesn't? I won't be able to complain anymore about this hip. I won't be able to have people wait on me anymore. So, they don't know what they say they want to be healed, but deep down inside, maybe they don't want to be healed. So before you really come and say, Lord, heal me, and tell him exactly what you want, you need to count the cost like this man does. He counts the cost, and he finally says, this is what I want. So step number three is you need to tell Jesus specifically what you want. Count the cost before you do. Now look at verse 52. Then Jesus said, well, go your way. Your faith has made you well or whole. The word there, sozo, in the Greek means complete. Your faith has made you complete. Not just spiritually. He's not healed of his spiritual blindness. He wasn't spiritually blind before, and he knew Jesus was the son of David. He knew that. That wasn't his problem, spiritual blindness. To be made whole, what had to happen? He had to be made physically well. So this word well or whole here means completeness, and it includes physical healing as well. Salvation, according to the Bible, is wholeness. And in the end, listen carefully. When we enter the millennium, he's giving us new bodies. In the end, salvation is physical as much as it is spiritual. And I think Christians have what we would call, in theological circles, a reductionist theology. We reduce it down to the minimum. Forgiveness of sins, salvation of the soul. And Jesus says, no, salvation is completeness. It involves physical well-being also. Now, you say, well, if I get healed, will I get sick again? No, sure you'll get sick again. Jesus forgave my sins when I got saved. Does he have to continue to forgive my sins? Will I sin again? When you got saved, he forgave your sins. Do you sin again? Does he forgive you again? He'll heal you. Will you get sick again? Can he heal you again? And then guess what? One day we will be raptured out of here, and one day our bodies will be made whole, and we'll never get sick again. And guess what? We'll never sin again. But we have distilled the gospel down to something that the disciples and Jesus would have never recognized, and this man wouldn't have wanted. That's not his problem. His problem is he is sick. Now, Jesus says something. He says, your faith has made you whole in verse 52. Whose faith? Jesus' faith? The healer's faith? The preacher's faith? No, it's the sick man's faith. We don't like that, do we? Now, this is not the way Jesus always heals, but this is one of the ways he heals. Okay? Because you need to understand that. So, it's blind Bartimaeus' faith. Now, faith is not believing that God can heal you. We all know that. We all say amen to that? Faith is believing that he will heal you. Faith is not believing that he can heal you. And that would be faith. It's sort of can. Can means what? Ability, might. But here, this is faith that believes that he will. So, it's the blind man's faith. Now, sometimes God heals sovereignly. Sometimes God heals through prayers. Sometimes God heals through physicians. Sometimes God heals through the gift of healing. Sometimes, however, he heals through the faith of the sick person. What is that? So, he said, your faith has made you whole. Now, look at verse 52. Again, the end of verse 52. And immediately he received his sight. That's the fourth verb and the fourth action. Notice what happens. He received his sight. Now in verse 51, when Jesus said, well, what do you want? He said, Rabbi, that I might, look, receive my sight. In verse 52, he did receive his sight. When? The moment he what? Believed. The moment he believed. Just like that, immediately he was healed. The moment, not that he believed that Jesus could, but believed that Jesus would, that moment he was instantly healed. It was simultaneous. To believe equals receive in the Bible. In the Bible, to believe equals receive. That's faith. How does the writer of Hebrews say what faith is? Faith is the what? Substance of things hoped for? The evidence. Wait a second. The evidence of things? Well, that really applies to this verse, doesn't it? So you said the moment he believes, he receives, and just like that, he is healed instantly. Now, I'm convinced, Esther, I've studied all this kind of stuff for the past 2 years. I've been spending a lot of time just thinking about the human psyche and the human makeup. I'm convinced, this is my bottom line on this kind of stuff, I'm convinced that God has made us this way. God's made us in a certain way. He has equipped us with a mechanism. I don't understand it, but I believe that God's equipped us with a mechanism that can be triggered. And when it does, healing takes place. And I believe this is one of the, this is not my scientific explanation, but people go into remission. They have cancer, and guess what? Instantly, they go into remission. Just like that. Not the medicine, but just what happens. Suddenly, they wake up, and they know I'm better. And they are better. And I think God has created our bodies that way. And he's put a mechanism in us that can be triggered. And Jesus said, what do you want? Boy, Jesus is making him respond in a certain way or getting him to respond in a certain way. And it produces the result. It's still God healing. But guess what? It's the man's faith. Jesus said, Jesus didn't say, no, let me do this. Okay, here's how we're going to do it. I'm going to come here and I'm going to lay hands on you and watch it.
Heal!
Well, then I'd say that was Jesus healing. But this case, what does he say? Your faith is made. And yet it's still God doing the healing because this is the way God created our lives. And I don't understand it all, but I think that we are missing so much in Christian circles. And there's a whole new realm of science out there right now. It's a neuroscience. It's actually it deals with our brains and our immune systems and all kinds of things that are going on out there. And the release of peptides out of the brain that go to cells in our body and actually communicate with parts of our body. And now scientists are discovering that we don't only have a mind in our brain, that our body actually has a brain, actually has a mind of its own. It's a crazy thing. There are chemicals that are released from our brain, they go down to our bodies, and they talk to the cells. They communicate with the cells. The cells actually have a mind that communicates with the peptides and all the different chemicals that are searching through our bodies. It's like our bodies have a mind of its own. We don't even understand it yet. It's so new. But it's all coming back and showing that these kinds of things has a theological explanation as well as it has a scientific explanation. So then look what happens in verse 52. And immediately he received his sight. He saw that. And now the fifth verb. And look what he does. He followed Jesus on the road. Which means he sells out to Jesus. And he follows him on the road. Follows him on the road where? To Jerusalem. And what's going to happen in Jerusalem? Jesus is going to be crucified. Can you imagine this? This man follows Jesus and suddenly he sees this man who triggered his faith to produce his healing, being crucified on the cross, and suddenly he realizes, boy, to be a follower of his could end up costing me my life. Maybe being blind doesn't look so bad after all. But to follow Jesus is very costly. So we see five steps here. Number one, the man gets Jesus' attention. See this with the verb, he cries out. Number two, he comes to Jesus. Doesn't expect Jesus to come to him. Maybe he did originally, but he comes to Jesus. Number three, he specifically expresses his desire. Number four, he exercises faith. He believes, he receives. And number five, he follows Jesus. And that's what we ask. When we come to Jesus and we ask him to touch our bodies, we come to him because we believe that he can heal us. We believe that. We believe that he will. But then we also say, Lord, now I give myself to you. I follow you. Does that make sense? So here's what we're going to do. We're going to have a prayer in a moment. Then we're going to have Don Morton go over here. We have Gene Blaylock and Carrie Blaylock over here. We have Jim Stevenson over there. We have David McKinnon over here. And in a moment, Phyllis is going to play the piano. And just get up there. Go and tell your request. We'll pray for you. The rest of you just come around your turn, put your hands on them, pray with them. If you need prayer and you're in your seat and you can't get up and go to one of these groups, raise your hands, I'll come and pray. Okay? That's what we're going to do. We're going to do this for 10 minutes. Father, I thank you for your word. I thank you that we have a Savior who offers not only spiritual healing, but ultimate healing. Wholeness. And Lord, it's not selfish of us. It's not presumptuous of us to come and ask you to touch our bodies any more than we ask you to touch our souls and forgive our sins on a daily basis. So Lord, help us to realize that this is authentic Christianity. Help us to speak people of faith, cry out and say, help.